Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my darlings, and welcome to the Hearts of LNP, brought to you by the Late Night Poets at allpoetry.com. The group hosts shows every night of the week on a variety of topics to ensure that there is something for everyone to enjoy. And if you want to support our shows, we have anthologies available on Amazon, which boast a wonderful selection of poetry offered up by the poets of our group. And speaking of our poets, with the gracious permission of several of our members, I have brought a reading list tonight for your listening pleasure. I encourage you to come in, find a comfortable seat, and make yourself at home. I am happily your host, Victoria Frost. Tonight, I wanted to delve into life, into those moments that we all go through that challenge who we are and ask us, is this who we are meant to be? And if we are, then great. We are affirmed in what we believe. And other times, it changes us innately. And so I've reached out to several poets, and they allowed me to use their pieces. Some people volunteered knowing what we'd be looking at. but I'm really, really excited about what tonight is to bring. As always, helping me make sure that this show is running smoothly, I have Pam here. How are you tonight, Pam?
Oh, I'm doing great. Looking forward to reading and commenting on the poetry, and, you know, looks like you got some good stuff tonight.
I'm really excited about it. And speaking about guests, do we by chance have anyone call in yet?
We do. We have one person, and that is Mark. So welcome, Mark. Glad you could join us.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Mark.
Second
welcome
show
to
today.
The show.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, since you're here, I'm going to grab your piece, if you wouldn't mind starting us off.
Oh, okay. All righty.
All right.
Should I begin now?
Yes, yes, you're fully welcome to begin when you are ready.
Letter written on a post-it note. I'm soon going to be dead. I feel you now at hand, in some weird way a presence, which I don't understand, listening while I write. Totally unplanned is how my life has been. I never made demand, just waited. A man for what? Guess what? A ghostly command. Was there ever anything else in the means that you employed? The planning, sequencing, the things that you enjoyed? Fragments with adhesives that tilted in the void, such as all the yellow notes in careful tears deployed on your refrigerator door, covered with notation from felt pens all run dry in daily calculation. All discarded not long after your quickly planned cremation in a deserted room where fiery creation had a simple meaning. Meanwhile, I was dreaming. End of poem.
Oh, Mark, this is fantastic. I see in your author's note that you talk about depression, and I won't lie, it makes me want to probe. It makes me want to ask questions, because I don't think that someone can write this way without being in a place in their life where they are confronted with the inevitable. It reminds me almost of The Stranger by Albert Camus, which is one of my favorite books, because in the very beginning, he's going to his mother's funeral, and he could not understand why she took a lover at the end of her life, because, you know, it's the end of her life. Why would she do this? And yet, as he comes to face his own confrontation with death, as he approaches the realization of the consequences of his actions and what that will mean, he begins to understand that there's more to life than just making our way to the grave. And yet there is something when we are confronted with that hard reality, that it makes us stop and pause and look at all those little things. And this poem, to me, captures that, those little things. The fact that you caught on to the felt have dried up, which, as someone who loves felt pens, it's insightful, because it's a reminder that left unattended, left uncared for, things wither and die. And in this, it really just gives me kind of a pause. Because the way in which you speak to her is almost as if she is there, even though you give the impression that she has passed. And it reminds me of, at the end of life, how often, depending on how a person passed, how often they will begin to see their loved ones come to gather them and greet them. And so to me, this is a deep right. It's a raw right. And if this is what you are going through, it's vulnerable. Oh my goodness, sorry, my cat is molesting my face. Is vulnerable and at the same time, know that you are not alone, that there are people that care about you here. I mean, I've only gotten to hang out with you a few times, but I just adore you already. So if you are going through this, there are people that are here, and that you do not need to be a forgotten post-it note. Really, really beautiful, right, Mark? And Pam, what did you think?
Wow, that's wonderful. That's wonderful you said that. Thanks, Victoria.
Of course. And Pam, did you get a chance to hear this poem?
Yes. I didn't get to hear the whole read, but I had read it. So I would definitely like to comment. And before I do, I would like to mention that Michael has joined us. So welcome, Michael. Glad you could join us.
Thank you.
Hi, Michael. Yeah, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you very much.
I really thought this was a powerful and definitely a raw write. It, you know, it's on about an extremely dark but important topic, because many people struggle with depression. Many people struggle with finding a sense of why can try to continue on with life. And I like that you put this in the form of a note, a letter to the mom, you know, because, you know, that just really adds to the depth of the emotion. And was there ever anything else in the means that you employed, the planning sequence, and for things that you enjoyed, fragments with adhesives that tilted in the void? Oh my goodness, there's some wonderful rhyme and flow in there. And I like that it's in the form of a question. And it's a question that we ask ourselves, that we ask our parents, you know, and we ask in general the universe and whatever higher power we accept and believe in. We want to know what is our purpose in life, and if we can't find it, then why are we continuing? And that oftentimes is a struggle for many people. I also like that you ended it with a couplet. I thought that was a really nice touch. Had a simple meaning, meanwhile I was dreaming, and the dreaming part kind of adds a nice little twist at the end. So very cool, excellent write, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Great comments, guys. Thanks.
That was a really beautiful comment, Pam. And I really like how you kind of touched on the idea of trying to search for this reason to continue going, because I do think that when you're depressed and in depression, it's hard to really want to continue on. So that was fantastic. And Michael, did you by chance get to hear and or read this poem?
Unfortunately, somebody was midway between reading it and I didn't catch the whole poem.
No worries. We'll have you catch on the next one then, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Of course. All right. And so with that, I'm going to have us go next to Lament and the Wrath by Laughing Soul. And I'll read this one. I cannot fake it. I can no more take it. Oh, what a plight. Scavengers unblouse my bosom at night. Thirsty claws gnaw deep, ashen white. Shadows dripping crimson enclasp my veins. Clenched fists my womb imprinted at night. Devil harnessed in a meshy labyrinth consummates my visage jadeite. Fake me not, O children of mine. Hear me lament. Hear me cry. Venom now my air. Beware the end now dawning nigh. Pray I quiver not. Pray I inflame not. Hurtled if I meet the moonlight, shall swallow darkness ocean and veil in a flashlight, Mother Earth and poem. And Pam, would you be so kind as to start us off on comments?
Absolutely. I would be happy to do that. Now, I have to say, this is one of the first poems of Laughing Soul I remember reading. You know, because I know she's fairly new to the group, so I'd like to say welcome to Late Night Poet. This is just beautiful. I cannot fake it. I can no more take it. Oh, what a plight. There's such a sense of just, you know, a declaration, being ready to stand up and fight the war within, but not knowing how to start. And I really like it. She addresses the scavengers, the shadows, the devil, and then she turns to Mother Earth with prayer. And it really just, you know, makes you think about all the spiritual elements of realms beyond our understanding, and how there's forces, you know, more than what we know, and there's battles going on more than what we know. And this is great all the way through, and I think it has that feel to me of that we are strongest when we humble ourselves and we turn to those powers that are greater than ourselves. And I really like that she ended this as a tribute to the moonlight and to Mother Earth. So excellent write and very well done.
That was a beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you so much. And Mark, what did you think? Do we still have Mark with us?
Mark in with us.
No, I'm here. I'm muted.
Okay.
I have to get used to it. I just saw the beautiful poem, the images of violation, the darkness. It's like something out of Edgar Allan Poe, but very intensely poetic. And but the feeling of invasiveness, the lament of the spirit, and I took this to be Mother Earth herself actually getting violated, like the Mother Earth. I'm not sure, but the Mother Earth at the end was like the signature to a message, and that it was our own Earth. Probably more than one interpretation of this poem, but we as her children and are also the victims of this, that something's occurring, there's some deep violation going on, and it can swallow darkness, ocean veils in a flashlight. And I personally related it, you know, to the things that are happening in our environment and global warming and all that kind of thing. It seemed like a good whether the poet meant that or not, but it seemed like a very good metaphor, and that lined up very well with the invasion and destruction and kind of horror described in the poem. It's a, you know, really profound kind of right, beautiful.
That was a fantastic comment, Mark. And I would agree. I really did view this a lot like Mother Earth lamenting the life that we live upon her, the way that we destroy the environment around us, the way that we seize wars upon her skin, or even how we burn things down, destroy things. I was driving through the city the other day. I'm not a city girl, but I live near a city and I work in a city. And if I could avoid the city, I would. I hate the city. I'm not a city girl. And I was commenting that it's just ugly. In the daylight, the city, most cities from my experience, they're ugly. They're overdeveloped. It's done in such a way that typically it's just not appealing to the eye. It's just, to me, it's not a beautiful thing, and I don't understand the appeal. But again, I'm not a city girl. But I do have to say that as I was driving back and I got to watch the lights light up and the darkness, the way that they shone out and upon the water, it was beautiful for a moment. But that also reminds me of this, the way in which we take over the land, we destroy the nature that is there in a way that is much like cancer. And it reminds me, with that thought, my dad's a radiologist, and he, or was a radiologist, he's retired, and he would always tell me that you could tell what lung cancer is because of the spider webbing. And while that is a terrifying thing to think about, this spider web of cancer, at the same time, if you think of a spider web, it can also be beautiful. And so in many ways, humans can be argued to be the cancer upon the earth. We can do beautiful things and we do terrible things. And so here is Mother Earth beseeching us to reconsider our actions and the impact that they have not only upon our lives, but upon the future lives that will live upon her. What is the future that we are creating? Is it not going to leave us cold as voided space? It's really beautiful, and I wholeheartedly agree with you, Mark, that I do feel like this is very much like a Mother Nature, the Mother Earth, Gaia, beseeching us to reconsider our actions. And just, it is very applicable to the world as it is right now. So thank you for that comment. And Michael, what did you think?
I thought it was very nice. I like it when a nice illustration is attached to the poem. And I don't know who, if it's an illustration or drawn by somebody, but that was really a nice little touch to enhance the poem. The message of the poem, I thought, was wonderful, about Earth, and there were some dark parts to it, but I thought it was very well written and expressed some of the words, like labyrinthine and other words. I like the, you know, people using words that are a little bit more of a higher level, and it helps people with their vocabulary a little bit, you know, to use these words in a sentence or in context. So that poem also did that for me when I was reading along. So bravo. Well done.
Awesome comment, Michael. Thank you so much. Uh-huh. All right. So the next poem that we're going to go to is going to be Life is Sand by Tila. And Pam, would you give this a read for us?
I would be happy to. All right. Life is Sand by Tila. And here we go. And it goes like this. Looking at it, one feels like, what? Is our life sand? It is. It's truthfully sand. Then why are we all not understanding that everything surrounding us is sand? We all are so busy enjoying the material world life, not thinking for a minute, is it worth it? This is not yours. This is mine. Belongs to me only. You have no right. Rich and poor, power, wealth, all temporary. Bling, bling, sad, but true. Today is yours. Yours will be someone else. Tomorrow, someone else will be other persons. Nothing stays forever. It stays for us to enjoy music, museum, or enjoying monuments like thousands of years of pyramids or Taj Mahal, statues of liberty or Van Gogh painting, Mozart's music, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, George Washington, and many more. Where are they all gone? Are they all here? No, just left their memories behind for us to appreciate, to learn from them all. Live life simple. Do good for all. Don't hurt others. Try to help as much as you can, for that you will be remembered. He or she was a good person. We came empty-handed. We will go empty-handed on the sand or ash. And poem.
Oh, goodness. I really love this poem. It's not a complex thought, and yet at the same time, I think that it's so very applicable. One of my favorite things to say, and mainly because I'm an accountant, but I do think that it's a good way for people to think about their finances, weird as it is that we do not buy things with money. We buy things with hours of our life. Is it worth it? And to me, this poem really kind of thinks about that idea as well. Why are we fighting over all these little immaterial things? Why do we focus upon keeping up with the Joneses? Why do we spend hours killing ourselves to drive a Lamborghini when in reality, the grave is the great equalizer? No one who goes into the grave is still going to be a king or a peasant. You might have an eternal resting place that is maybe a little nicer than someone else, but fact of the matter is that at the end of the day, we all die. And when we do, the things we have do not go with us. I had I'm not sure how to call it. My words are escaping me right now. I had a very real moment this weekend today. I have a friend who I've been friends with for about 3 years. Yeah, about 3 years. And she unexpectedly passed away yesterday. She went to the hospital, some kidney and liver issues, and she went into failure, and it happened so quickly that she's now no longer with us. She's in her 30s, was in her 30s, and she's gone. She's close to my age, and she's gone. And so this poem really reminds me of that so much of her time, of my time, of everyone's time is spent focusing on bills and jobs and money and all the little things that we need, and not on the things that are important, not on the things that will actually leave a memory of us, that will leave a legacy, no matter how small it is. But as a society, for some reason, we have this idea that if we have a big enough house, we have a big enough car, and we have a fancy enough job that somehow makes us important. But death comes when we least expect it. And when it does, what's really going to matter? It's, to me, a very profound poem, even in its simplicity. And Michael, what did you think?
Sand. I like the imagery and the usage of sand in this poem. I think of like the hourglass, you know, the old method of people keeping time with sand trickling from one chamber of the top of the hourglass to the bottom chamber. And I've written a little bit about the talk about sand, but this is really good. I really like the image, the attached illustration, the hand and the sand. And mentioning all these different monuments, you know, over the years, a lot of them are relics of the past, but we can still see some of these today, like the pyramids and the Taj Mahal, etc. They're not all here, obviously. All these great people in the past, like Martin Luther King and George Washington, Mahatma Gandhi. I like how the philosophy, the philosophical message that this poem conveys. So I thought it was really good, and the poet is really talented in this poem.
Beautiful comment, Michael. And I do really like that you mentioned like the hands in the sand, because sand does slip through our hands much as time does. And so I agree, that was a fantastic use of imagery for this metaphor. And Mark, what did you think? Maybe not on mute, maybe?
I thought it was a lovely. Yes, I am. I thought it was a lovely, beautiful, simply direct poem. And it just, the language just sounded kind of musical and nice. Then why are we not, all not understanding that everything surrounding us is sand. Just the flow of that line, it almost feels like sand, kind of, and moving. The comparison to sand is and time, I thought was an interesting metaphor. Never quite thought of that, and I will think of it. Just the flow of sand, the flow of time, how are grains of sand flowing together, moving, forming, reshaping like sand does in the desert. And into new shapes, and just all always being pushed into something else. As the poem said, today is yours. Yours will be someone else tomorrow. Someone else will be other persons. It's almost like the flow of sand being pushed around on the desert. It was, and then the earlier comment you made, Victoria, I think helped me with this poem. Your comment about, as an accountant, it's really not about dollars. It's about time. It's about the hours of your life. And this poem says that as well, you know, that, and then the very strong message at the end, well, if it's not about dollars, what is it? Well, it's about connecting to others, because and that's the best use of your hours. That's how your limited hours expand and flows like sand in the hours of all other people. Your help, your connection to them. It was just thoughtful and beautiful and a very strong metaphor, using sand to express all those things. Very nice poem.
Beautiful comment, Mark. And I agree, listening to your comment and how you talk about how it's almost like the way that they've worded it, the way that they've written this, it's like that moving sand, tracing patterns in it, the sand flowing from hands. You're right. I definitely feel it. So thank you for bringing that into the conversation. That was a magnificent comment. And Pam, what did you think?
Well, I really enjoy and appreciate Tila and her poetry, and I also have to agree that the metaphor of the sand works really well for expressing the idea that, you know, the things we have in this life are temporary. And then I like how the poem asks the question, so why are we making such a fuss over it? Why are we fighting over money and power? Why are we corrupting our personal morals for the sake of things that are temporary? So just an excellent write all the way through, and very well done.
Beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you so much. And you're right. I do love that question, because it makes us all reflect on why have we prioritized what we have? Why do we put our focus upon whatever it is we put our focus upon, and is that really where we want it to be in the end? So beautiful, beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you. And Michael, I'm not seeing your poem in the topic yet. I did refresh, but if you need help getting to that, let me know so we can hear your poem. But as you wait, would you like to read one of the other poems we have, or would you like me to have Mark read that, Michael, while we're waiting for your poem?
You know, it is odd. I did post it, and it just disappeared for some reason. I'll have to redo it. But,
okay.
Yeah, let me go ahead and read this poem.
I'm going to need to read the poem that's up in LNP, but I'll double-check the topic, Hearts of LNP, in the group, because that's where we need to have that poem posted in order to read it, okay?
Yeah. Okay, I do have one question. I noticed that there's different chat room, like what's being said, group messages, or it's like different. It's like the same thing, but different. I don't know. It's hard to explain.
In order to have your poems read on the show, you have to go into the actual show topics. So you would go into Late Night Poets group on All Poetry. So it would be like allpoetry.com / /late night poets. And then there's a topic board, and my topic, Hearts of LNP 32921, is right up at the top. And so when you post in that topic, that's when we read stuff on those particular shows. But the actual group is, it'll always have its chat going, but we only post show contests occasionally, and then, of course, the poems that we are actually reading on the show as they happen. Otherwise, we like to keep that as socializing for everybody. Does that make sense?
Excellent. Yes, it does.
Okay, perfect. So if you would like to read The Campfire by Mitch Ullman, you're welcome to. Otherwise, I can have Mark read that if you want to get your poem posted, so we could have that here pretty soon.
Sure. Let me go ahead and read it. I enjoy reading other people's poetry.
Awesome. All right. It is up whenever you're ready.
Sure. I see it right before me here. The Campfire. In the house made of wood and stone, near the lake where darkness roams, on the meadow beneath a steel sky, upon the hill, O Devi. On ancient stone to bathe in the light, out of the castle in a cloak of white, a ragged man once told, in the heat of the night, pipe in his hand in the tongue of might. Be as you wish to seem on a beam of light.
Beautiful read. Thank you so much. Beautiful, beautiful read. I think what I like this is that, to me at least, it's kind of this reminder that regardless of where we are, regardless of where we came from, of where we are going or where we are failing to go, we get to choose who we are. We get to choose how we react to things. One of my favorite ways to approach days is you're always going to have a good day and a bad day. You always have days that are like a 10 and they're perfect. And then you have days that are like 1 and they're like the crappiest days you could possibly have. I'm not going to be able to control if Joe Smith decides to cut me off and flip me off and just be pissed off at me because I was in the wrong place at the wrong time and he wanted to be there. I'm not going to be able to change news that I get. I'm not going to be able to change if the sun is rainy or out. I'm not going to be able to change those things, but I get to choose how I'm going to react. And so to me, this poem is really applicable in how we approach life. Are we going to allow life to constantly knock us down and say, nope, this is out of my control, it's crummy, and I'm going to wallow in it? Or are we going to try and find the good in it? Are we going to say, you know, yeah, this was a crummy thing, but, you know, it could have been worse? Are we going to approach things with gentleness, or are we going to allow it to be, make us jaded? And so to me, this is a really poignant write about how we get to choose how we present ourselves, how we get to react to the things we cannot control, because sometimes that's all we have, is how we want to be perceived. I'm in love with his writes. He's quickly becoming one of my favorite authors. So I just adored this piece. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I have to say he's pretty amazing when it comes to the brevity. The fact that he's for us with just a few lines, and that he puts us, even with the title, The Campfire, I mean, right there you know this is a moment of contemplation, of thinking about your surroundings, thinking about your life, and all that it is offering up or not offering up. And I really like how you touched on the fact, Victoria, about the good days and the bad days, and it's all about how we react to them. And it's always intriguing to me how imagery can evoke emotion. And I think he plays with that very well, an excellent write and very well done.
Beautiful comment, Pam, and I agree. Like that, you hit it on the head. He really does set up a scene for us in very few words that we cannot help but see and be there and feel them. And I really do think that's just what makes his work just so poignant, just beautiful. And Mark, what did you think?
Comments so far, I completely agree with it. It's a poem about direction, being who you need to be, journeying and, you know, traveling in the world. It's kind of a magical context with the castle in the middle of the woods, made out of wood and stone. And this ragged man picture is really interesting. It's almost like going through ancient woods and meeting a ragged man, maybe kind of a Merlin figure, a sorcerer figure near a castle. I just love the, it's already been noted, it's a beautiful image, and but it's got kind of a fairy tale or King Arthur legend quality to it, of just going through the woods, finding the castle, a ragged man comes out and talks to you like a prophet about yourself, about your destiny, about what you need to be in the world. And the language is beautiful. You know, I like the last the way he used the rhymes, light, bathe in the light, cloak of white in the heat of the night. It was just very musical, and to me gave a kind of a mystical feeling to the whole encounter of the technique is just very, very strong in this poem, and the story implied here is, you know, very, very compelling and beautiful. It's a great poem.
Beautiful comment. Yours, actually, the way that you were talking about how it was kind of mystical, reminds me of the wise old wizards that we hear about in, you know, old medieval tales, those magical tales where the wise old wizard comes out and just provides information that should be common sense, and yet, you know, it's just got that quirk to it, that wisdom behind it. That was a really beautiful and insightful comment, Mark. So thank you. And Michael, having read it, what did you think?
I liked it. It was good. There's a phrase in French, eau de vie. I know eau means water, I believe. Well, what does it mean? A water of life, probably, right? Sounds
yeah,
like it.
Water of life.
Right? Vie, I guess, because I know a little bit of Spanish. And that's a Latin language, so. Okay. French is a Latin language, too, by the way. Considered. I like the rhyming scheme. It was a good use of the of words, in other words, the economy of words, brevity, pretty much. And the last two lines, be as you wish to seem on the beam of light. I'm trying to figure out what that means. It's basically the campfire, right? It's burning, and maybe you can see the embers in the air or something of that type. I'm not sure, but that's probably what it means to me. So
that was a really
good poem.
Go ahead. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
No, a good poem. I guess when I'm done reviewing a poem, I'll say end review. That way, you know, I'm done.
Well, I do appreciate your comment. And I mean, the beautiful thing about poetry is that we all kind of get a different interpretation, but I can see where you would see that beam of light. I was actually driving this past weekend, and there was a bonfire that was going on, but it was kind of ending, and the embers were flying off into the sky, and it reminded me of like tiny stars. But I can see where you talk about that beam of light, how they kind of create this little beam that they seem to walk upon until they burn out. So that was a really beautiful interpretation. So I appreciate you sharing that.
Thank you. All right.
And the next one that we're going to read is going to be The Silent Walk. And Mark, would you be so kind as to read this one for us?
Sure. The Silent Walk. In the blink of an eye, sweet silence of death comes for us all, no matter what end. Then peacefulness sights, marvels surprise, and a blink once again, and you're flying the sky. No reason to cry, for there's nothing inside that will pain and or deny all your love. The grave may be cold, but you left that behind, and all of your worries are left in the ground. Now comes the secret that no one will tell. Is there a bright heaven or just too much hell? And what of our sins? Someone please tell me, please. I pray through the night on old bended knees. Whatever is coming, you'll know right away. But for now, my sweet children, just rest through the day. For when death does come and you're nervous inside, you and your love will forever survive. End of poem.
Beautiful read, Mark. Thank you. And a beautiful write by Flower Muse. I think there's real poignance in this. It reminds me of a contest that we did for Strange Magic After Midnight, which was Into the Graveyard. It was a reckoning, asking people to go and think about, why do we fear? Why as a society do we so often fear death? Do we try and find ways to push against it? And for centuries, we have all done this, the Fountain of Youth, the Eau de Vie. There's always this will, you know, even cryogenically freezing ourselves. We're always thinking of ways in which to avoid death. And yet we forget that there are things that get to go with us. The love, the memory, I mean, depending on what you believe, and hope. We hope that all these things go with us and that what is left behind is just as beautiful. The things that really matter that are left behind, how poignant they are in the lives of those that mean to us. But I do love the recognition that death comes in a blink of an eye. It comes in sweet silence. It sneaks up upon us. And if all we did was sit and worry about when we will die, we would probably worry ourselves into an early grave. But instead, this poem reminds us to hold fast to the things that matter, that while, yes, death is inevitable, we can leave bits and pieces of ourselves behind to warm those cold nights with people that miss us, that we can leave those lessons and those impressions that will help guide the next generation, and that perhaps we do not need to worry so much about if there's a heaven or too much hell, because one day we're going to find out anyways. It's a gentle rite. It reads to me very much like a mother or a grandmother putting a child to bed, kind of like a silent prayer, a reminder, like, this is, you know, you are protected, you are safe, this is going to happen, but it's not going to happen right now. And I just think that that was just really beautifully done. I really like the tone and the methodology behind it. The gentle rhyming is just really beautifully done. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, this is absolutely beautiful. I have to say Flower Muse is probably one of my all-time favorites on all poetry. He really does have a kind of way of using gentle imagery to make a point. No reason to cry, for there's nothing inside that will pain or deny all your love. The grave may be cold, but you left that behind, and all of your worries are left in the ground. And whatever is coming, you'll know right away. But for now, my sweet children, just rest through the day. I like how this has, like you mentioned, Doug, the idea of a grown-up who really cares for these children. And really just the voice of somebody who cares about humanity in general and wants them to be comforted in the fact that there is joy to be found in this life and joy to be found in the next life. So absolutely an amazing write and very well done.
That was a beautiful comment, Pam, and I love that you remind us there is joy to be found in this life and the next life, because so often we forget that that's a possibility. And Michael, what did you think?
I liked it. It used a good message. Hold on, I'm sorry, I'm not on the page. I lost my place on the page on my computer. I'm sorry. Can I come back to that later? I gotta
yes,
get my
yes, of course.
Right. Okay.
Of course. And Mark, what did you think?
Well, just a very consoling poem, and the flow of it, the tone of it, the language, and the thought about behind it. And it's more than one thought. It's just kind of lining up our spirit and our mind to accept the fact that death occurs. And then it's this very interesting kind of exploration of it, saying, well, it occurs, but it's going to be liberated, accepted, and in a way it's going to be, if you liberate yourself from your fears about it, that's something you need to do, and it's the fear of death that pins you down. In this life, it's important to push that aside and accept and just live life, is what I take from the poem. And it's got the note of a lullaby at times, that stanza that Pam pointed out, called out, whatever is coming, you'll know right away, but for now, my sweet children, just rest through the day. That's got a kind of lullaby reassurance that affects adults too. And just the technique of it, I just love the way he uses partial rhyme and full rhyme. Death and are rhyme, partial rhyme, surprise, sky. And then in the third stanza, he emphasizes the love there by no rhyme at all, for there's nothing inside that will pay, or the rhyme's moved up one line. There's no reason to cry, for there's nothing inside that will pain or deny all your love. And he steps out of rhyme there and for emphasis, and it's a beautiful transition to the rest of the poem. There's a lot of subtle technique there. There's more than one thought about acceptance. It's actually kind of a simple but interwoven meditation on death and the need to accept it and just settle down and enjoy life. It's a poem I'll go back and read more than once. A very strong poem.
Oh, Mark, that was such a fantastic comment. I just adored the way in which you talked about how it's consoling, and yet at the same time, it's much like a lullaby. It lulls you into this safe place, reminds you that it's going to be okay, because sometimes it's all we need to hear. And even if we don't want to hear it, sometimes just having that gentle rhythm can rock us into that moment of peace. So that was truly beautiful, Mark. Thank you for sharing that. All right. So the next place that we're going
to
go.
Read it again.
Oh, go ahead.
I just said, yeah, I bookmarked this poem. I'm really going to read it a couple more times. So.
Yeah, it's such a great poem, in my opinion. Like, even as an adult, it's just kind of nice to have someone who just molds you, comforts you. They aren't speaking down to you gently. And I think that's kind of a forgotten you know, skill, if you will, to be able to comfort people without dismissing their feelings, without being condescending, without, you know, being overtly sympathetic, and instead just saying, hey, yeah, this is hard. This is hard, but it's going to be okay. I think that's just beautiful. So I agree. It's definitely one that I've saved myself. So we'll have to put our brains together and talk about it later, because I just love what you have to say. All right. Our next poem that we're going to go to is going to be This is Beyond the Flames of a Phoenix by Diabolical Beard. And I'll take this read. My world is just an insomnia roller coaster. I am amongst delusions with my kind, being foreshadowing my ghost, cemeteries in my mind. 100 centuries of painted agony, morning star turns me into a tragedy. My face expressions is anonymous. I am peeling like Victorian wallpaper. I am the fire that needs your oxygen. Tell me how long it has been. This is beyond the flames of a phoenix. Now enter the deepness, out of the reach like Venus. Make a wish, see me as a shooting star or asteroid. My tomb is amongst the crows. Trust me, the heart doesn't beat in rows. Your love won't wake my sleep forever. Your eyes trapped in my vision, crucified hearts into separate divisions. End poem. And Pam, would you start us off with comments?
Absolutely. It's always good to see DB's poetry. My world is just an insomnia roller coaster. I'm amongst illusions with my kind and foreshadowing my ghost. I like that. And the reason I like that is the fact that the roller coaster, the insomnia roller coaster makes for a wonderful metaphor in the struggles of not being able to sleep and foreshadowing my ghost. That to me just really speaks about how when you get trapped in that cycle of insomnia and you know things are going to start going downhill for you mentally, physically, emotionally, but yet you can't stop it. I like this all the way through. I also like I am peeling like Victorian wallpaper. You know, I'm sure every single one of us has had a house with that old wallpaper that's starting to peel, and you can't help. And the thing with that is, I don't know about anybody else, whenever I see something peeling, I can't leave it alone. I have to pick at it. And so that's kind of the, even though I'm kind of putting myself into that metaphor, that's what I get from that, is the idea of a wound or something that you just have to keep picking at. And just absolutely an amazing write all the way through, and very well done.
That was an awesome comment, Pam.
Oh,
and I,
she is.
No, it was me. I was talking on mute for a second. I just got so excited, and so I just didn't unmute myself. So, but I do like what you said about like the peeling of like Victorian wallpaper. My girlfriends pick on me because I play violin. I went to college on a violin and vocal scholarship. And if you've ever played violin, you're not allowed to have long nails. If you can touch the tips of your fingers and feel your nails are too long. And so I've always kept my nails like really, really short, but I always love long nails. So the problem is I'll go and I'll get like a full set of nails and I'll be able to keep them for like 5 days. And as soon as there's like an imperfection in the nail, like maybe like a little lip or something, I just start picking at it until it's peeled. And so as you were talking about that, you just like triggered all my nerves to be like, there's something that's wrong here. But I think you're right. I love the way that he kind of talks about love and romance. It can be beautiful. It can be the oxygen to your fire. It can be like a resurrection of a phoenix out of the flames. The touch can be much like that of a goddess, where you're just amazed by it. And yet, in the dark night, when insomnia plagues the mind and we question what we see and what we think, you cannot help but start to pick at the wallpaper. You cannot help but start to think about that one time that was maybe kind of off and try and fill in the blanks And sometimes you end up destroying the wall, destroying the relationship, because you just had to pick at something that could have been easily bandaged or wasn't even really there. Sometimes we create that peeling wallpaper because we just have to find something to dig our nails into, and it causes our hearts to be torn apart. It causes love and relationships to struggle, all because we just had to pick. It's such a really thoughtful poem, and I think it's deeper than some would give it credit for. I just love it. It's just fantastically done. And I do believe we've had a ninja sneak onto the show. So
mm-hmm.
I know
I'm
you're
here.
There.
Hey, Victoria. Miss Pam.
So I'm just going to sit there and not say hi.
I was waiting to get called on.
Okay. Well, you're called on, Ninja.
I was being good. Which is very hard for
that's
me.
That's first.
So, I know.
Well,
it even hurts a little.
Did you by chance get to hear this poem?
I didn't. I'm sorry. I can go over it if you need me to make a comment, though, and come back to me.
If you would like. I know we've still got three other people to comment. So if you would like, that's fine, or we can get you on
the next
one. Sure
thing. Come around me at the end, and I'll read it over.
Awesome. Okay, in that case, Michael, what did you think?
I like the middle stanza where there's a use of anthropomorphism or a personification, saying that I am the fire that needs your oxygen, right? I like that because if you know anything about fire, a fire needs three things for it to exist. It needs oxygen, heat, and it also needs, what is the other one? Here I am talking about it, and I forgot the third one. Oxygen, heat, and fuel. There we go. Oxygen, heat, and fuel. And I just thought about that when I was following along with this poem. Obviously talk about the phoenix, which is it's on the Greek mythology, I believe. It's about a bird that falls in the ashes but then rises up again, kind of like a resurrection sort of story. What else? The last stanza, my tomb is amongst the crows. I'd like to find out what that means, but I know there are legends about the crow symbolizing something, where in certain kinds of myths, it was a crow that would carry the soul of the dead to its rightful place, wherever that was. So it reminded me about that movie called The Crow, which came out like, I don't know, 30, 25 years ago. It's based on a comic book, but it was titled The Crow. And there's like a symbolism with the crow that I'm getting from this. So I like birds used for symbols, and I thought this poem did a great job. Really good. And that's it. Okay. In review.
So I wanted to clarify, were you referencing Eric Draven, the crow?
Yes, that's right. That's what it is.
Yes.
What?
I love The Crow. I love The Crow. It's a
yeah,
whole series. And the comic books are one of my favorite. So.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to. I'm sorry, you just got it. But yeah, there was
No, you're totally good. You're totally good. It was a very apt idea to pull from there. It really is. And so I just wanted to make sure. I was like, wait, make sure that he's not referencing maybe like Poe's Raven. But no, The Crow with Eric Draven. Yes. I love that. That is a fantastic reference, Michael. And I think it's very, very apt. Absolutely. And he did. He did do a really good job with kind of the idea of a crow or a raven or even the phoenix, like you mentioned, of it rising up out of the ashes. He really did pull on those birds. And so, yeah, that was a really great, really great catch. And Mark, what did you think?
you mentioned.
Dropped right as he was about to say his
first word.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I was so excited for his comment. Okay, well, hopefully he'll call back. It's Gremlins in the system tonight.
Yeah, no, I'm
Gremlins.
Here.
Oh,
my connection died somehow, but I dialed back in. Should I go ahead and comment?
Don't worry. Yes,
right.
We totally bought you time while you called back in, so please do comment.
All right. You mentioned about relationships and the struggle, and I saw this. I interpreted this poem as it's a poem of a complex process. It's clearly the insomnia roller coaster in its ups and downs, and to me it was about somebody dealing with deep-seated depression, which is something I go through at times. You know, I've taken Prozac in the past for years and stuff like that. So I really identified with a lot of the feeling and imagery in this poem and the ups and downs and kind of trying to rejuvenate from a relationship. That's, I think, a positive thing in this case. That's what I took the references to you and I'm the fire that needs your oxygen, a person who's struggling and needs the presence of the other person else they're going to sit. And it was interesting. It's part of the roller coaster going up into the, there's imagery of going up into the heavens like Morning Star or down into the cemetery and tomb. It seems like those are the two extremes, just kind of beautiful imagery. But the guy's on our roller, or person is on a roller coaster and trying to deal with the situation. And he's talking to his, his significant other about the need for help. I need your oxygen, make a wish to see me as a shooting star, to go up to the heavens instead of down into the tomb among the crows and not to wait too long. Your love won't wake my sleep forever. Your eyes trapped in my visions, crucified heart into separate division, the idea of separation there. I love the ending. The last three lines are beautiful. The poem kind of ends in that state of trying to cope, which is a very vivid, emotional poem. I really loved it.
That was a really awesome comment, Mark. That really was. And I love how, while a lot of us have focused more upon like the relationship ideas, you did remind us that this is an insomniac's roller coaster. This is the rumination of those late nights when the brain just won't shut down. I think that was really insightful to kind of pull us back, at least for a moment, into that reminder that sometimes we can find these torments or go through a process because we have those hours to count. Really beautiful comment. Thank you so much. And Silk, do you want to give us a comment real quick? And then I'll have Pam get a chance to read it now.
Yes, I totally dug the Diabolical Beard's piece here, especially that beginning, the opening stanza, where he is talking about insomnia and how that, I love these lines right here, been foreshadowing my ghost, cemeteries in my mind, 100 centuries of painted agony, Morning Star turns me into a tragedy. I kind of like it was kind of like a dual meaning that got for me. I thought he was kind of saying the morning stars, the sun, but maybe he also got a clue. Maybe he was talking about the devil, or in a way being kind of clever there. I'm not sure though. It just struck me that way. But I just loved his metaphor here. Also the I am peeling like Victorian wallpaper, and anyone who has suffered with a little bit of a insomnia, I think, knows that feeling. And I just thought this was a very, very great piece. I enjoyed it.
That was a really awesome comment, Luke. Thank you so much. And Pam, do you want to give us a quick comment on this one? And then I'm going to move on to Mamya because I know she is listening in from the shadows.
Yeah, I was.
Oh, you gave
the
first
comment?
Yep. I'm a terrible person who's keeping track of nothing, apparently. Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
In which
There's
case,
so
I think.
Well, she just make her make a second comment. I mean, that's cool.
I mean, Pam always has so much like insightful thoughts that I just like to hear her talk. She is the Kevin of late night poets. She knows all, and you don't fuck with Pam. That's all I'm saying. Okay. In which case.
Exactly. You don't
we
want
will
a
have
Mamya
up next.
I don't know.
Okay, so we're going to have Mamya's poem up next. And Pam, would you be so kind as to read this one for us?
Oh, absolutely. I would be happy to read for Mamya. Now, I really appreciate Mamya. One of the main reasons I appreciate her, well, for many reasons, but one of them happens to be that she posts links on topic boards for shows. And besides her wonderful poetry and her sweet voice, I do appreciate that about her.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh, and I have to say, I'm gonna pull away from you for just a second because she was so sweet when she posted in the topic. She was like, I know I'm late, but if you want to fit me in. And I was like, Mamya, I will always take your work. So it was just so sweet that she was able to contribute that way, even though she felt bad because of daylight saving time. So anyways.
Absolutely.
Take it away,
Pam. You're right. She is a sweetheart. And this is Whittling by Mamya, and it goes like this. The blade slipped, and her blood blossomed in that cold day in autumn. Tight-lipped, she gripped the blood-stained wood she cut against the grain. Now dark red, the heart she whittled comes across as crippled. As she bled, her knife lays forsaken, while her world was shaken. End poem. I think that since there's blood involved, you should get a comment from Silk first.
Okay. You know what? I think that's smart. Silk, how about you do us the honors of the first comment?
Well, I'm glad I'm the first to come to when there's blood involved. I've really enjoyed this. It had a darkness to it that... I don't know, it's palpable, and really, to me, I don't know, it had this kind of air of someone who's acting in desperation, or just, I don't know, I also got a little bit of a sense of vengeance out of it. It's hard to place my finger on exactly the feeling I got from this, because I got quite a bit of, like, little half feelings from it. And it had a little, that also gave it mystery, too. But I really enjoyed Now, Dark Red, the heart she whittled comes across as crippled. Just a very great dark poem. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, come on now. I wanted to hear more about the blood. Shame on you, Phil. No.
But you always gotta love the blood. But you got to say, revenge is great, too, though. Revenge is just as good as blood. And I got that sense of vengeance. I got a sense of vengeance from this poem. So.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's fair. I can
in
see
way,
where
I
there
mean,
would
even
be
if
some.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Like I said, it's a little bit, I got a sense of vengeance in it, like, I don't know. To me, because the last stanza kind of speaks to dying, but also, I don't know, just something about it made me think vengeance, too. It just had that kind of air about it.
No, and I think that's really fair. Like, I can definitely see the vengeance kind of side to it because, you know, sometimes things happen to us. And people seek vengeance against us for a genuine, honest mistake. You know, there are people that need their pound of flesh, regardless of if it's actually deserved or not. I have an ex-husband. Surprise. I have an ex-husband, and even though he is the one who stepped out of the marriage, he believed that because he was suddenly back in the same place he was before we got married, before we even started dating, i.e. living at his parents' house, working part-time at UPS, not being able to go to college, not having a college degree, like just kind of stuck in life, that for some reason he deserved something, that he deserved to take money from me and make my life hell and threaten me to the extent that I actually had to get a restraining order against him. You know, there are people that just seek vengeance. They feel that vengeance is theirs. And so I can see that here, that perhaps she made a mistake and the blade has slipped. Someone has cut her, has attacked her. And because of that, as she tries to continue on and better herself, as she goes to the heart of the problem and sees that it is crippled, it doesn't change the fact that she is bleeding and that eventually she's going to have to step away from her work and help someone. It reminds me of the idea that cats who have been abused are going to strike you very quickly, whether you actually mean them harm or not. They will strike at you because they feel that that is their way to protect themselves. And yet,
right,
we humans are very much that way. We seek vengeance and revenge even when perhaps there is no need for it. But that is what we've trained ourselves to do. So I think the vengeance kind of aspect that you're talking about is 100% on par with it.
Right.
So that was a fantastic comment, Silk. So go ahead.
If I could, I'll say one more thing to Star that, me, I don't know. For some reason, I got the feeling that this was somebody cutting themselves, pissed off at another person, sort of type of thing. I don't know.
Maybe
had a cutter angle or even someone, I don't know. I just got the feeling that this is about somebody cutting themselves or even maybe committing suicide to get back at somebody. I don't know why I just got that feeling out of this poem. I might be way off base, but.
No, but I can see that too. I think that's really valid too. I mean, you know, I agree. My initial reaction was that she had cut herself, perhaps in the attempt to make herself better. But at the same time, there are definitely people, heck, I was as a teen, who would cut myself because,
yeah, me too,
you know, of life. So, you know, I can see that too. I absolutely can see that too. But we do have a lot of poems, so I'm going to move on to – no, you're great. I love it. I love it. So I'm going to move on to the next commenter. Mark, would you mind sharing your thoughts?
Yeah, no, it's very interesting listening to you and so kind of work it out. I think there's kind of an intention – my variant on what both of you said, which I agree with, is I think the poet may have introduced this ambiguity here. I took the word heart. I mean, it can be used as another word for a deer, a heart, but that's kind of a rare use. I think it was intended as a real heart. She's got a knife. She's whittling a heart out of a piece of wood. It could be a deer what I read in, she's holding this piece of wood and cutting a heart out of it and cuts herself, like Silk said, and it bleeds all over the heart. And it's not clear whether it's somebody else's heart or her own heart. I mean, I think it's really interesting what's being done here, that it's intentionally, and probably maybe the metaphor is that she's cut herself, but the heart's flooded and that she's whittling is flooded in blood, and it's maybe two hearts, her own and whoever she has feelings about, and like was said already, it's a bit of a suicidal act. It's an accident, but it's got a feeling of almost self-harm. I think it's a metaphor for a relationship. It's really interesting. I'm going to have to think about this one. It's a beautiful poem. It's very strong.
That was an awesome comment, Mark. And I do agree. Like, there is that idea of self-harm, of whether intentionally or unintentionally harming ourselves, even if it's actually cutting or just the bad habits that we pick up, the little things that we do that are just self-destructive, that self-sabotage our life and prevent us from getting to where we need to be, finishing the projects and the self-improvement that we need to do. I think that was a really awesome comment, Mark. So thank you for that. And Pam, am I going to call on you a second time and you're going to tell me that you've already commented?
Not this time.
No. Thank God. Yeah. Okay. What do you think, Pam?
Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, I really enjoyed everyone's interpretations and comments. And to me, this just is such a wonderful, haunting right about a heart created from pain. Like, so the idea that who we are and the things we feel are created from our experiences. And when you constantly experience pain and heartbreak, rejection, it forms you. And it makes it a struggle to love. And you see yourself as someone who is damaged. And I really think that touches on the idea of being so emotionally damaged that you question whether or not you're capable of ever loving again. So excellent light and very well done.
Beautiful comment, Pam. I really love that. And Michael, I believe you're our last one to comment on this. What did you think?
Hold on. I'm sorry, I'm having some difficulty with my computer again. I forgot. What is the name of this poem again?
Whittling by Mamya.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. A little bit of a brain freeze going here. But I think this poem works on many different levels. You know, these different interpretations that you can get from what the heart means. Maybe it's like a double entendre, that maybe you've heard of that expression, where a heart, like you said, can mean a deer, but it also, I was thinking, oh, maybe the person, you know, misspelled the word heart. It was a typo or something. I don't know. I kind of thought about that, but now that, you know, I'm thinking, oh, it's a deer, yeah. I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous. Anyways, it could be explaining like a suicide attempt or somebody who was just wants to hurt themselves for some reason. But I don't know if the meaning of that poem is intentionally supposed to be as dark as how I perceive it to be. But I thought it was very expressive, the imagery of the blood and the knife and the whittling, you know, with the wood, that kind of reverberated with me. So, well done, Paul.
Beautiful comment, Michael. And I know you said that you're a little nervous, but would you be up for reading your poem?
Of course. You know what? I had a hard time trying to find out which box to cut, copy, and paste the link. But it sounds like everybody has it now.
Yep. We've got it, and it is now on the board for you to read.
Okay, let me get to that poem. I'm like on different pages, and one moment. Give me about 15 seconds. Evergreen. Okay, this poem is titled Evergreen. As I walked through the forest, I searched for inspiration. High up in the alpine air, I find emancipation. Looking upwards towards the trees, a chill touches my bones. Pines and firs and junipers are laden with their cones. I think of the one I lost when I used to be hers. We used to walk hand in hand amid these conifers. She was strong, could do no wrong. She came to the scene. When the autumn came and went, her essence was still green. She is like an evergreen that can survive the freeze. I'm not lost among the frost. beneath these snowy trees. She refused to wilt and fall like last November's flora. Even though she's passed away, I think about her aura. I won't cry. I will get by. She's in a better place. I am awed because my God has also shown me grace. God created and designed those trees. Like, if we fear death coming near, think of the evergreen. To me, it's the afterlife. So even though she's gone, I believe she's with the Lord. Her soul will carry on. End poem.
Very beautiful poem. It's almost heartbreaking. The impression that I get is that as you're walking through the forest, you're reminded of a loved one, of a possibly a lover who has unfortunately left. And those people, they leave a mark upon our hearts and upon our souls, a void that never quite fills. And yet there's that strength, like the evergreens, that life that continues on. You know, she's somewhere that you will get to be with her once again. And that hope of reunion, it's a truly beautiful poem. So thank you so much for sharing that. And Mark, what did you think?
I just thought it's interesting how the theme tonight is experience and what you learn from experience. And we were getting this poem and Flower Muse's poem about consolation, you know, just being in nature and in this, in the other poem, in the sky here in the woods, and taking away from experience and, you know, what happens, consolation. You know, some things happened, and the strong metaphor here of the forest and the trees and how it's related to the loved one and what happened, that something happened to her, but she refused to fall and wilt and fall. She's like an evergreen in his mind because of the belief she's become again herself in a better place. It's just a lovely poem in that way, and development of this metaphor of person as a flourishing evergreen, and just ending on that note of peace and reconciliation. Just a very beautiful meditation on life and death and the final reconciliation here. A really beautiful poem.
That was an awesome comment, Mark. And I love how you reminded us that it is this kind of reconciliation between loss and love and what is to come, at least the hope of what is to come. That was beautiful and insightful. Thank you for sharing. And Silk, what did you think?
If I can get my phone to unlock, so I was on mute. I really enjoyed this whole piece. Especially, I liked this stanza in particular, Michael. She is like an evergreen that can survive the freeze. I'm not lost among the frost beneath these snowy trees. To me, that spoke of very nature-y saying, and it also spoke of how it feels inside to be cold, and but saying you're not lost even though you're cold there without her presence. And I thought it was, like Victoria was saying, that is very kind of heartbreaking in a way too here, because I could very much see that you lost someone you loved and cared for here. And I know what that's like. And she's right, it does leave a void, no one can fill. And you read it very well. I liked the flow you did, the flow and the rhyme that you used in this piece. It did have a certain type of almost meter, but especially in that stanza I quoted there, it was like the perfect spot on, I thought, meter there. And just lovely piece. I really enjoyed it.
Beautiful comments, Silk. Thank you. And we do only have 30 minutes left in the show, so I am going to start limiting comments. And so with that, I am going to have us move on to My Clock No More by Abenex. And Mark, would you be, actually, Silk, would you be so kind as to read this one?
Sure thing.
Make you read some poetry while you're here?
I was trying to find a poem of mine, but I have maybe one or two that fit prompt, but I'd have to really look. I am
well, you're always welcome
poetry,
to. You know.
But here we go.
You know how to do it.
Here we go. This one's called My Clock No More by Abenex. Now my clock ticks no more, as with night who does secure it, as the nail who dwells in a door. Sight with sound fail to pour, and hush was stirred to be pure, of life that so tinkles to the core. My clock halted to store tranquility full to bore me, and freezing the life of before. No inferno to bore me with hell's heat to endure, feeling once had I need not implore. No quake esteemed by lore of time and its pressure sure to awaken my clock by its roar. Time frozen fails to soar, consciousness frozen to tour, around in a realm where hush is horror. Oh, I like that. It was different.
That was really cool. Thank you for reading that, Silk. Uh-huh. And Pam, would you start us off?
Well, first of all, I don't know if anybody else thought this, but this very much reminds me, it has the feel of an episode of The Twilight Zone. Like, you know, I don't know if it has a feel of the exact episode. You know what I mean? Like, it just, you could see, like, the clock representing somebody's life, and it's stopping, and when it stops, their life stops. And, you know, and also on a technical level, pulling off end monorhyme all the way through and having it not feel forced and having a poem make sense, it's definitely, there's a big kudos there because he pulled that off. And I really like this all the way through, but especially My Clock Halted Did Store Tranquility Full Glory Me and Freezing the Life of Before. It really is a wonderful extended metaphor on how the whole temporary nature of life and how it can oftentimes come to that abrupt halt that we weren't expecting. So just a powerful write and very well done.
Oh, and that was a powerful comment, Pam. Thank you. And Mark, would you also like to give us some thoughts?
I just, I love the mono rhyme too. It, you know, it was natural and unforced, but it led to some, I thought, to some interesting ways of saying things. And hush so stirred to be pure. I mean, that's he's trying to make the rhyme there, but he does it well in a natural way, and it, you know, brings out a kind of a new you know, image and a new way of stating something. And I thought it was kind of lovely, of life that so tinkles to the core. It's a poem about, you know, just to me, what I took from it was it's just a poem about slowly descending into tranquility, kind of closing down, but you know, entering a state of tranquility. At night is with night who does secure, and running away from the commotion of the world slowly. It progresses through the poems. No quake esteemed by lore of time. That's another of many situations in this poem where he's trying to make the rhyme, and he does, and it's natural, but he also gets a new way of stating something out of doing that. No quake esteemed by lore of time. I think that's really interesting and well done. And finally he, you know, descends into this state of total tranquility at the end. It's just a progression, and it's interesting, and it's beautiful. Very nice poem.
That was a wonderful comment, Mark. Thank you. And finally, Michael, what did you think?
I guess Michael had to go.
Okay, well, we appreciate Michael being here while he was. And so since I would like to get a few more poems in, we will leave it at that and move on to our next one. So this one is letter written. Nope. I'm going back to Mark. I like Mark so much that I just wanted to read it again. We're going to go to The Jello Tree of Grey Gardens by Dash Patty One. And let's see. Mark, will you give this one a read for us since I was going to have you read the last one? Do we lose Mark?
Yeah, I see it. I was looking for the poem, I found it, so ready to read.
Oh, good. Wonderful.
The Jello Tree of Grey Gardens. The mold of the bitch who had lived there the longest semi-solidified into a gelatinous tree shape, an amorphous blue form positioned at the garden entrance. There she wobbled and wiggled like jello, twisting and jiggling, struggling to be free. Eternally grateful that she no longer had to teach intro to common sense class 5 days a week. It was that Friday in November when the big man arrived. He was fanning his face as he squinted his eyes. Disturbed by the dysmorphic blue tree disguise, now dipping and bobbing chaotically. But the man knew all about her trickery, her refusal to leave, her eccentricity. So he decided to share, for a modest cash fee, his recipe for refreshing ecstasy iced tea. His mind now open and intolerance-free, he straddled the blue puddle that once was she, the misunderstood woman, Grey Gardens' legacy. End of poem.
That was a really, really nice poem and a great read, Mark. Thank you. I think what really stood out to me is that this does not come off, initially at least, as a pleasant woman, this kind of person who's just been here for so long that she's become rooted into place. She still wiggles, but she's not quite solid like a tree, and yet here she is rooted. And at the same time, you get this idea that she's gotten tired and frayed by having to teach people things that should be common sense. She shouldn't have to tell people, you know, hey, if you put the cookies in the oven too long, they're going to burn. And yet we are often surrounded by, at least I joke, that common sense now is a superpower. People just don't have it. They don't think about it. And so with that in mind, I could also empathize with this woman because there is that frustration of people who are so selfish that they don't see past common sense, common courtesy even. And so then we get to see from this man's eyes that perhaps he knew more of her than the rest of the world did, that the gardener who watched her grow into this tree, the one who tended to her, got to see all the ways and how she was chaotic and tricky and eccentric. And yet He knew that she was misunderstood. She wasn't really a bitch. She wasn't glad to teach people common sense. It didn't take much to please her. She just wanted common courtesy. I can get it. I can understand that. But we also as a society don't always take time to try and see the good in people. We see the people cut us off and we think that they are jerks. When in reality, perhaps they are rushing off to see a loved one that they haven't seen in forever. Perhaps a family member is in the hospital. We do not give grace because that would be common sense. That would be common courtesy. And as a society, we've lost that. It's really, to me, actually quite poignant and quite beautiful and just really well done in how she did it. And Pam, what did you think?
Well, first of all, I'm pretty sure I've had ecstasy iced tea at one of Silk's parties, but I don't really remember that well.
I would believe you. I believe this.
Okay. Yeah, right. No, I actually have to agree with you. This is powerful and it's poignant. And I like how it's about someone who, not only about common sense, but somebody who thinks outside the box, somebody that people see as a bitch, but really she's been molded by life. And I really like the metaphor of the Jell-O mold, because those Jell-O dishes that were so popular, where you had them made in the Christmas tree-shaped mold, and you were such a good wife, a good mother, if you could get it perfectly up, you know, a good cook, if you could get it perfectly out of the mold, but not all of us can. And so that's kind of, for me, a great symbolism for life and how not all of us were made to create those perfect Jell-O trees and perfect presentation. But what we do have is we have the ability to think for ourselves and the ability to stand up for those who need someone to stand up for them. So just excellent, right, and very well done.
Beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you. And I got a giggle when you're talking about demolding the Jell-O, because I have done this. And it is. There is a trick to it to make sure that your Jell-O doesn't fall apart or tear or just, it's not as easy as it looks. There's a skill. All right. So we are going to keep moving along because we have about 15 minutes left and I'd like to get at least two more poems in. So with that being said, I would like to have us read Full Moon Sacrifice by Pam Eight. And I will read this one. Last hope, he was driving through the desert in the middle of nowhere. It was dark with no stars, no light, except for a big reddish full moon following along my passenger side window. All the guys seemed nice. They were cooking at campfire. We were having a nice visit when I heard a noise off to the side. So I went to investigate. The moon so high by the light of the fire, there was a pen with 9 tiny baby piglets inside. I was petting them and laughing as they made sweet piglet grunts. Suddenly, I heard horrendous squealing. It was coming from behind me. The men, along with my defective husband, dragged the mama pig out at her feet, slitting her throat in front of me and the piglets. She was laying at my feet, in shock, reaching to touch her cheek, desperate death eyes locked upon me. I could feel her within my being, all at once, thrust from my body, looking down from above. My husband was gross, disgustingly crass as he made demented remarks about screwing the pig in the ass. Eyes wide open, saliva strands from lips to teeth, unable to fathom how the prick ended up being married to a coward like me. Reconnecting with pig essence, you go. I send your soul to heaven. Tell the others up there where you've been and keep the gates open for later on tonight. He's sure to slaughter me once again, once again, once again, once again. Save me a spot, dear friend. End poem. Well, that kind of leaves me speechless. And Mark, would you start us off with comments?
Wow, is all I can say. What a story. What a brutal, well-described, horribly beautiful story. It's about, you know, violation. It's about being with the very, very wrong person, is what I got from it. The driving through the desert, you know, the kind of beautiful scenes, showing up with the husband driving and showing up with all the guys, presumably the husband's friends, and everybody seemed normal and nice, and then they just show their real side. They find the pigs nearby and drag them out and slaughter them right there, and the narrator connects with the pig's unnecessary agony. And the way the husband acted as it carried out this ritual, you know, it's one thing to produce meat. It's another thing to act so cruelly and crazily. And it just, you know, she makes clear that's a metaphor for her marriage and her life. The pig's been brutally killed, humiliated in a horrible, you know, everything's happened in a horrible way. And She's faced with the result that she's connected and married to the man who, what do you know, treats her exactly the same way. You know, that's what she's saying at the end. In some way, whether he humiliates her later tonight or abuses her physically or sexually, she's going to go through the same thing because she's in a bad marriage. She's in with the wrong person. And she needs to get away. Save me a spot, dear friend. She's talking to the pig now in heaven. It's just very poignant and dramatic and, you know, kind of a deep metaphor for abuse in a relationship. It's beautifully written. Very, you know, I really like it.
Beautiful comment, Mark. Really beautiful comment. And I would agree. You know, I've seen abuse in relationships, and I have been in an abusive relationship. And sometimes it takes something that is just so horrific to make people kind of wake up. You know, my aunt finally left her abusive husband after he beat a child out of her with the Bible, quoting scripture verse to her as he did it to justify his actions. You know, my ex-husband, it took me walking in to his girlfriend shopping in the house that I bought of all the things that she wanted for me to finally say, you know, I'm probably not really intending to stick it out. Just horrific things that make us reevaluate our actions. And it is terrifying that this would be what it took. To watch the man that she married slaughter a pig for fun, to think it's a joke, to desecrate a creature that didn't have anything to do with him, didn't do anything to him. It's not even really for food. And to finally have that confrontation, I appreciate that she made it almost like an out-of-body experience, because sometimes that's what it is. Just take yourself out of the situation, see them for what they are, and just think, damn. And I do hope that after this, if she actually went through this, I do hope that it was enough for her to act and move and change, make a change for the better, because you do have to wonder how those people get married. You do have to wonder why someone would ever want to be with someone like that. And yet it happens every day. If only we knew the cure to stop it. Fantastic comment, Mark, and fantastic poem, Pam 8. All right, and next up we are going to read Poetic Picasso, The Beauty of Life. And Pam, could I get you to read this one?
absolutely The Beauty of Life by Poetic Picasso, and it goes like this. Indeed, suppose that in life being told what beauty means is only an abstract thing, so unattainable in our human nature, an imperfection that only knows a haunting insecurity of oneself, a deceitful mirror of which displays a physical beauty but not one's mental scars. I would need to bleed for the world to see these hidden scars. Thus, I could never cease to exist as long as I breathe, but I could forever remain like a wraith trapped in my soul. I do not want to be invisible, instead, tangible invisible, for I adore the people who see me when I am invisible to everyone else, to those individuals that forsook me, to the fate of the lions. I survived the roaring tempest admirably. I ultimately discovered my truth and the distinction between illusion and reality. Regrettably, beauty seems too many as the one thing that defines us naturally. Yet beauty is not solely corporal, and its form is genuinely expressed by love. Love is the embodiment of the natural essence of beauty. To look at a thing is very different from appreciating it. One does not see anything truly until one sees its pure beauty. Then and only then does it come into existence as beautiful. For to understand the world, a man must first understand himself. And to understand himself, he must learn to accept the beauty of life. End poem.
Oh, that was a fantastic read, Pam, and a fantastic write. Silk, would you mind starting us off with a comment on this? Silk, are
sure,
you talking to the mute button?
Yeah, I was trying to get off mute. My phone, I swear, since it updated to the next Android 10 or whatever, it's been funky trying to get off mute. But
oh yeah.
No, I really. This poem had a lot of impact to me. I'm trying to find this one line that really. Oh yeah, here it is. I would need to bleed for the world to see these hidden scars. This I could never cease to exist as long as I breathe, but I could forever remain like a wraith trapped in my soul. That alone right there, I thought that could be a kind of standalone poem on its own, because I really dug what he was saying just in these three stanzas or lines right here, because to me it spoke about being kind of trapped inside, an introvert maybe, or just feeling like you're trapped in this, like a dying body, which I feel like that sometimes. I even have times where I kind of am like, damn, why am I trapped in this this body of death, which is actually in the Bible too. I've read a verse in there where I think it even says something like that I'm trapped in this body of death. And I think that's a recurring thought to many humans, and it's very relatable. And I just love the way he wrote it out here. But no, the whole piece was very impactful, and I really enjoyed it. It was very well done.
That was an awesome comment, Silk. And I agree. I think we've all had a moment where we recognize the way that the body in which we are in decays, that we're in this body of death, and that death will come
right for
it. It reminds me of the idea that not to get biblical, but I was watching the movie God's Not Dead. Not getting biblical here, but I think one of my favorite things is
I wasn't trying to get biblical. I was just trying to say that.
Yeah, I think what was really poignant to me in that movie, again, not getting into religion. But they talked about, you know, the guy's talking to like his mom with dementia, and he goes, you know, I'm like the worst person I know, and I'm doing really, really well. And you're like the nicest person I know, and you've got dementia, and you don't even know where you are. Why? And, you know, she made a comment. She goes, you know, if the cage is, if you're sitting in a gilded cage, then you're not going to want to leave until it's too late. And I think that also kind of reminds me of this poem, because sometimes we do surround ourselves with a gilded cage that we don't want to leave, because why should we? Why do we want to be uncomfortable? And sometimes we give up a lot more than we intend to with that. But anyways, I digress.
Right. Mark, would you mind? All that, yeah.
Yeah. So Mark, would you mind giving us a comment to follow up to finish up the show? And then, of course, I want to remind everyone that if you have a moment, be sure to check out all the poems that were posted in the topic. We have some really, really awesome poems that unfortunately we didn't get to tonight, but really, just really awesome pieces. So be sure to leave comments, check them out, check out the reading list as always. And Mark, I'm going to send it off to you for a quick comment.
Yeah, it's just an incredible, this is a great way to finish the night. It was an incredibly beautiful poem. The lines, an imperfection that only knows a haunting insecurity of oneself. It's just a meditation about being wounded by life and by one's emotions not wanting to react to it too deeply, become a wraith trapped in my soul. It's the struggle between the emotional pain life inflicts and the need to not be invisible, be tangible and visible and connected to everybody, and I think everybody can identify with this, and it's just so beautifully expressed, and I love the way it just kind of steps into love is the just the need for love. You just have to love is the embodiment of the natural essence of beauty. To look at a thing is very different from appreciating it. You have to connect. You have to love. You have to step out of your own emotional pain and reaction, and you need to be connected. And this poem expresses it fully, and it ends on the necessary acceptance to understand what's going on, to understand yourself. You have to just be connected to others, which means you have to accept the beauty of life, because it lies in the connection to others. It's just a wonderful poem.
Beautiful words, Mark. Thank you. And the perfect comment to end the show. I do want to give a shout out to Late Night Poets for being there to host this show for us, for all the wonderful poets who write in. It is truly your work that makes this show. And of course, my amazing commentators, Michael, Mark, Silk, for being here, and Pam, the Kevin of Late Night Poetry, who keeps everyone in line and makes sure their shows run smoothly. You guys are all fantastic. Be sure to check out the contest topic in Late Night Poets to see what contests our fellow poets are holding, including contests for the shows. And be sure to keep a lookout for tomorrow's show and throughout the entire week. Like I said, we've got a little bit of something for everyone. So thank you all for all that you do. You guys are amazing, and happy Monday. I hope your weeks go well. Thanks for being here, guys.
Great show, Victoria. Lots of love, everybody. Good night, everyone.